Episode 119 of Outlander Cast is brought to you by Shudder. To try Shudder for 30 days, go to Shudder, that's shudder.com/podcast, and use promo code OutlanderCast. All the way from Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Starz. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake. And, you know, I think I'm starting to get a little bit of a man crush on David Barry.
Just a little bit? Not even like a big old one, because that's where I'm at, and I'm not even a man to have a man crush.
No, you see, my man crush, like my major man crushes, are reserved for the likes of Benedict Cumberbatch. And Michael Fassbender.
So you're just saying the more that you see of David Barry, that crush will probably continue to grow.
Right. Okay. Right. And it's happening. It's slowly beginning.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. He's a fine actor. Did a great job in season three as Lord John Grey. But, you know, there is something that I just learned, as a matter of fact. That not only is he like super hunky, you know, and he's a good looking man.
He is.
He's vampire esque.
Yes.
Okay.
Without the sparkles, but yes.
But the man can sing. The man can sing.
He
went to school for it, did the whole thing, and that somehow became an actor. I don't know how he did it, but he did. And we may or may not.
We do.
Have a surprise for you.
We do.
At the wait, way to kill it.
Okay, there you go.
That's a professional tease.
So this is like a super exciting Droughtlander episode, because if you're anything like me, Droughtlander has taken so flippin' long. I feel like I could have done a lot of things instead of doing what I do, which is rewatch Outlander and listen to the soundtrack and reread the books. But that's been a lot of fun. But listen, maybe you've been someone who's fortunate enough during Droughtlander to go to an Outlander event. Okay.
Sure.
Maybe you are. Maybe you're one of those special people and you get to do fun things and see fun people and get fun swag. But if you're like the rest of us and you've just been...
The rest of us jabronis.
In the drought, okay? In the straight up drought. And you are thirsting for some Outlander stuff. We're really excited because this episode is for you. This episode is for those of you who are thirsty.
And not like Instagram or Twitter thirsty. This is just Outlander thirsty.
I mean
thirsty.
Like you're like, gosh, I wish I could go to one of those events and see people and do all the things.
Right.
This is for you guys.
So we were actually fortunate enough to have some representatives at one of these amazing events. And it was actually Angela Hickey and Karen Rutledge who were at an event produced by Kim Stewart Perman, who actually owns this thing called Novel Adventures. And it was at the Mast Farm Inn down in North Carolina.
Now, Angela is part of our Street Squad. Street Squad members giving y'all a huge high five over the podcast airwaves. Street Squad members are people who get to go to these events that we're all jealous about. You know. And they go and they help rep about Outlander Cast. And Karen Rutledge is one of our amazing bloggers here at Outlander Cast. So we're going to actually be having a piece on the blog highlighting all the fabulous details of this event and why you should absolutely be going next year if you can. Aside from the fact that they have a special guest every year. So, for example, last year they had Caesar Domboy, and this year, of course, it was naturally David Barry.
Which is why we're all here today, because as you saw in the title of this fantastic award-winning podcast,
dun, 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 dun.
We had a brief chat. Well, not we, Mary and I. Actually, Angela Hickey had a brief chat with David Barry.
We were there in spirit.
And Angela,
just like all of you who were there in spirit. Guys, seriously, I'm giving y'all a big hug because we're here in the drought with you. And this is how we get through this together. We're all in this together. High School Musical style.
We're all in this together.
I should
not be singing. Anyway.
Nope.
I am not David Barry, okay? And you're going to find out why at the end of this episode. I'm just saying. Anyway, a big shout out, obviously, to Karen for being there. As Mary said, we're going to have a great article about the event, the gathering at the Ridge. But also to Angela Hickey for arranging this little few questions with David and recording the audio for us so we could get this out on the podcast.
All right. So you ready to jump into the interview?
Yes. Let's get to it. All right, so before we get into the episode, first, I just wanted to say that we are not actually including Angela's voice in the questions. And the reason why we're not is because there was a lot of background noise as this interview was happening.
And Angela wisely made sure that the better audio quality would come from David himself.
Correct. So actually, he was holding the microphone as she was asking. So what we're going to do is we're going to be asking these questions. Well, we're going to be telling you the questions. We're going to be telling you the questions that she asked, and then we're going to play David's response, and then we're going to have a few discussion points along the road as we listen to his discussion.
Yeah. So for example,
the first question.
This one was about, so David Barry did not read Outlander before he started this role of Lord John Grey, but then he finally sat down, read them, and read the subsequent Lord John Grey novels. Right. So Angela asked, you know, did this help inform him of his performance in any way?
I did prep more. I don't know how it affected my performance. I leave that to the audience to kind of to make up their minds. For me personally, I guess it fleshed out a little more detail, but I think what's important for an actor is to always act on instinct and to act from their gut. So it's your connection with that character from a gut level. So that's what I try to keep, regardless of the amount of research, because I think that's what's important and that's what's going to give you the good performance.
So I really like this answer, and it's actually quite a good question. And I like it because there is a distinct difference in reading these novels and then not reading these novels. And the fact that he could act from his gut either way is important. And did you like his portrayal in season 3?
Yes.
Even without him reading the books?
Yes.
Why? I mean, what about David Barry do you think was important to this character?
Oh, man. He really got this amazing balance that is Lord John Grey. The strength and yet this passion.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, passion. Look at you.
Beautiful passion.
Sure.
And appreciation of someone that he loves. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I don't know. I feel like you often can't. And as a gay man, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, he was just able to balance his character so beautifully, so that I don't know. I think he did a fantastic job. Yes.
Yeah. For myself too, I think, you know, David again, a good looking man. He's got all the tools. Okay, we'll put it that way.
He's got all the tools. What does that even mean?
He's a five. You know, in context of baseball, he's a 5-tool player.
I don't even want to know. Continue.
But what I'm getting at is what I liked about Lord John and David Barry's performance in season 3 was I thought it was a very sincere performance. Mm. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like they were trying to put a guy in a role that was incapable of fulfilling that role. You had to have a certain bit of masculinity in that role, and I think David Barry has that. I think he can pull off being tough. Like when he actually in our season 3 finale party, the only time that the entire crowd got up and started cheering was when David Barry as Lord John Grey tells off the lieutenant, being like, "Hey, go, you know."
Go pound sand,
you know?
Take
a hike.
I got you.
Everybody cheered for that, and it was believable. But he also needed to be a little vulnerable because you wouldn't be able to believe those scenes with Jamie or Sam when he's having, a show of affection. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like, you know, I want to, you know, have relations, but just affection in general. Like when he's like, "I'll take care of your kid. Don't worry about it." that to me, I think is something, without seeing much of David Barry's work outside of Outlander,
agreed.
I feel like that is pretty natural to this guy. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed his performance. Because I will say this, to me, I hate when people, like when actors are just generically good looking. Like, they're just good looking because they're good looking. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like, you were cast for this because you're beautiful.
Yeah. And, like, you're just generic. You're just like any other good looking.
Like what?
We were watching Mission Impossible.
Yep.
We were watching Mission Impossible.
Yep.
Rogue Nation. And Mary noticed one of the henchmen.
Oh, my God.
She was calling
Contour him, Guy.
Contour Guy. Contour Guy is one of the henchmen that Ethan Hunt kills in the rafters.
Only reason he was in it is because he was gorgeous.
No, I'm sorry. It wasn't in the rafters. It was in the guy gets killed in the
sound booth.
In the sound booth at the opera scene. And Mary's calling him Contour Guy because he was just generically good looking.
That's it. And he had the perfect cheekbone structure. And I was like, of course. They don't get like the fat guy who's got pockmarks all over his cheeks, who might have like a little bump on his nose. No, they got perfectly contoured, chiseled, you know, guy right
not,
there.
Not Stan from The Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I'm getting at is I was afraid when I saw him that he was almost a little tad generically good looking, but he brought the performance. I thought he was really truly great.
So of course, since David then did read the books, you know, the question of course comes up, like, what does he think now of Diana's writing, and did anything in her portrayals of these characters surprise him?
I saw she's got a definitely consistency to what she's writing. I mean, the books are always rooted in history, and they have you know, epic narratives and plots. What struck me about the Lord John ones is that character's voice, is that the amount of humor that she's able to put into that, as well as the mystery component, which I love, like the kind of detective novel component to those novels. And I think it's a nice kind of like more contained story, which is what I noticed from reading those.
First off, can we just give major props to that bagpipe player?
Bringing it.
Straight up, I'm going to bring my bagpipes to this event and like accompany David Barry. Okay, pure enthusiasm. But you know, I was just thinking about this while listening to this clip, about how cool it must be for people who are in David's position that get to act in this role,
sure,
where there's this whole epic universe that is not necessarily what you're going to be. You're portraying just this minute part. So usually actors in shows or movies, that is it. There might be fan fiction out there, but sure, there's nothing necessarily always put down by this author. But people who get to do works like this that are based upon extraordinarily huge series, it must be so awesome in their off time, in their Droughtlander, to sit in a hammock and be like, what do I do next?
Right. It's kind of like Harry Potter. You know, like when, like, it's like, I liken Lord John Grey to like Remus Lupin. You know, like he plays an important role, but he's going to weave in and out of the story. At least that's what it feels like to me.
Like, he's not Jamie and Claire. He's not Harry.
Right. He's not Harry. He's not Jamie and Claire, but he plays an important role in terms of Jamie and Claire, or in this case for Remus Lupin, for Harry.
Like, I feel like Remus is too low of a character, Blake.
Really? How about Sirius Black?
Okay. I'll stand up more for that.
Okay. You'll co-sign?
Yeah. Family.
So I feel like, yes, you're right. Being able to take a step back and find... we've brought in like six different
things in this interview. It's like so funny because you don't really know that much, so I'm just like, sure.
No, yeah, but I'm just saying that's the way that I feel. You know, like the general feeling I get about the character without reading the book and without seeing the next season or whatever. That's, I feel like he's going to weave in and out of.
I think you will enjoy reading. I think you do need to read the Lord John Grey series at some point. At some point.
Maybe.
I think you'd enjoy
maybe. But being able to take a step back and see his role within this larger universe is important. And I guess what I want to know from you, specifically because I haven't read the books and because we're in a space where the show has yet to reach season 4 and his role, potential role in season 4, what did you think about David Barry and his portrayal of Lord John Grey and how it actually translated from the book in season three, you know, to the show. Did you find that he did the character justice, or did you think, what did you think about the character? Was the character like too much or too little in the book, and did they have a good even translation in the show?
I mean,
did you think he was a better character in the show, or was he better in the book?
I enjoyed seeing Lord John Grey on screen. I think he was a character that I had a little difficulty with because I was on Claire's side. And when someone comes creeping on my man,
okay, I got
you. Don't really like see that person necessarily in the light that I would like to. It's weird because when you read these books, if you read the books ahead of time, you visualized the characters in a little bit of a different way. So then to meet this Lord John Grey, I was like, oh.
Right.
Okay.
I see it.
Like, and it's not that he was bad. I mean, as you got to see, he's an amazing character. He's an amazing man. So I felt good about him. But yep. I feel like now with David Barry as Lord John Grey, I feel a lot better. And I've also let down my stay away from my man kind of, you know.
Do you want to know why? I'll tell you why you feel that way.
Why?
Because he was sincere.
Oh.
I told you. I'm bringing it today.
Well, what do I always say about cover your children's ears, bitches?
Bitches be crazy.
Okay? They come after your man. They come after your man. It's not your man you have to worry about.
It's the crazy bitch.
Shh. Okay, the children can listen now. The children can listen now.
Earmuffs off.
Earmuffs off. But, you know, like, once that all began, I was like, now I'm okay.
So you liked him better in the show than you did in the book?
I liked him better in the show, but also that's because I've got to know him through the books better. So, and I think, I don't know.
No, it makes sense because, you know, having read the first book of Outlander now, I'll say that Black Jack Randall, in my case, is nowhere near the character that he is in the show than what he is in the book.
Yeah.
And I like the villain a lot more in the show. And even Frank himself, because of Tobias Menzies and how he played it and the way that it was written, a much, much better character.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much more sincere. There you go again. And much more relatable because...
I mean, Lord John Grey is amazing.
Right.
He's an amazing character, but I'm just saying that David Barry helped me love Lord John Grey. Like, love him.
Right. I know.
Like, love him without the chip on my shoulder. Because I had that little chip.
Wait, were you, like, when they have the conversation, were you like, Claire and Lord John Grey, were you like, dude, F that guy. No thanks.
Oh, when I read the book?
When you read the book, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what. Like, I screw.
All I thought about was that girl that was hitting on you while you were playing softball when we were dating.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was like, we're never going to be friends. And here she is, 10 years later, has two babies and married. And I'm still like,
Still don't want to be friends.
I'm not inviting her over for dinner. Not making her shepherd's pie.
All right, we're going to take a quick...
That's like one of the two things I can make. Let's be real. I can make shepherd's pie and tacos.
Tacos.
Oh, and that chicken dish.
The chicken artichoke dish.
That's it.
You can bake pretty good, too.
Not making her anything.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break to talk about our spots. Would you quit messing with me in the advertisement here?
I don't forget.
We got sponsors to take care of.
It's the Scott in me. I don't forget.
So I wanted to remind you guys that this episode is actually brought to you by Shudder, which is essentially what they would equate to the Netflix for horror films. Now, for those of you who are out there that do love horror, this is just an amazing thing because it has... Well, first of all, it's only $4.99 a month, and it has the largest, fastest-growing, human-curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment and films and television shows on God's green earth. And I'm telling you, it's not just about horror, even though that is... The phrase that they use. It's about thrillers and horrors, but it's suspense, and everything is added weekly. And I will tell you too that You know how sometimes when you go to, you know, those other streaming apps, it's just, they have like advertisements everywhere.
Yes.
And it's just cluttered and boxes and you can't tell where you're looking and where you're going. This is very simple. It's very easy to look at.
Ad-free.
And it's ad-free. And it offers original films and series, horror classics and hits. And it's on any device you can think of.
iPhone.
The iPhone, the iPad, Apple TV, which we got. The Xbox One, which we have. The Fire TV, Chromecast.
Android,
anything,
Roku.
Anything you could think of. And I have to say, I love horror. I love thrillers, whether it's paranormal or whatever. And I've always challenged you guys to go out and see different things and use different opportunities to watch, to exercise your brain, right? When it comes to actually watching films, because, you know, it's important to exercise your brain, that muscle. For me, when I first watched my first real horror film, it was Hellraiser. And I was terrified. You know, Pinhead and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And when I got a chance to actually see that Hellraiser was on Shudder, I wanted to go back and relive that for some reason. So I watched it, and it was just as scary as I remembered.
You know, I can't really watch this genre that much because back when I was 6, I watched this really scary movie with this man that steals babies and gives them to goblins. It's David Bowie in The Labyrinth. Maybe that's not really scary to all of you, but I was only 6. That's on Shudder. So if you want to relive The Labyrinth, childhood nightmare.
That's right.
You can also see that.
But, you know, with Halloween coming up soon, relatively soon, and getting into horror season and getting into thriller season, like, even going back and just recognizing all the Halloween films and all the old, and it goes from all these great like slasher flicks to like camp and like, you know, like really B movie stuff, all the way to like the movie Pi that was just out by Darren Aronofsky. So please go to Shudder and so remember, try Shudder for free for 30 days. Go to shudder.com/podcast and use the promo code OutlanderCast. Remember to get Shudder free for 30 days.
So I'm really excited that you are beginning to have this crush, this man crush on David Barry. Because
it's coming.
You know, it's coming. And one of the reasons that you were saying that you enjoy these other actors that you really appreciate so much is because you've seen them for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens to this character. I'm going to keep things spoiler free since that's how we keep things on this podcast.
Correct.
But if Lord John Grey continues for a long time, I think you're going to be pretty happy. I think you're going to be pretty happy.
I mean, we all know he's going to be in season 3. Season 4. He's going to be in it. He's already been confirmed for the cast. He's going to be in it. So I look forward to seeing what he has to offer. And I think that is important because one of the questions that was asked of him was, Sam Heughan actually let it out that David Barry actually wrote a letter to Sam Heughan as Jamie while he, David Barry, was in character.
Oh my God, you just got so confusing.
Okay, David Barry wrote a letter to Sam Heughan in character as Lord John Grey.
To Jamie.
To the character of Jamie.
Correct.
That's how it went.
There you go.
So he was asked if he could tell us his thought process there. And a couple
like
of things.
Like, just imagine that. Just imagine that. Just imagine Sam showing up, gets this letter to Jamie.
And hey,
and then
Jamie,
he reads it.
I know.
It's from Lord John Grey.
So he,
a fictional character, but he's like down with it because he's like, I live in this fictional world too. And then he reads it, hopefully by candlelight, so it's more authentic.
Are you going to let me get to the, are you just going to keep fantasizing?
I wonder, like, okay, continue.
Okay.
I'm like imagining this entire fictional
All right,
process.
Calm down. You're turning red, okay? I see these little beads of sweat coming off your forehead. All
I
right.
wonder if Lord John Grey, I wonder if David wrote it with like a quill. Did he have like a Bic number 7?
Or did he write it on parchment?
Did he make the parchment himself?
Okay, all right, we're going to play the sound. All right, so remember, he wrote this letter, and they wanted to know his process. And,
did he use the print shop?
And if there was something that
That was on set.
A couple of things that he may have been able to include in the letter.
I can't tell you the content of the letter because... Okay. But I can tell you, yeah, I wrote a letter to Sam. Hopefully he wasn't too weirded out by it. But it's part of my process. I like to... I've written a letter to someone else in the cast as well. Whether or not they tell you, that's another story.
I thought it was great. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, but I think, well, Lord John and Jamie surely keep in contact somehow mm-hmm. because he's got his son. Mm-hmm. I think it only helps to, like, you know, build the story that you see on the screen. So hopefully it wasn't a waste of time.
No, it was great.
It was great. That sounds great.
My imagining of Sam Heughan reading this by candlelight makes it even greater.
See, I'm going to hold off my speculation for the next question. But I kind of love this stuff, like Robert De Niro being like in character the whole time. Or like...
Tobias Menzies does this.
Yeah, Tobias Menzies being in character.
He's just a jerk when he's blackjack.
And why wouldn't you want to be, right? I think, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis... being in, like, as like the butcher in Gangs of New York, just totally being in character all the time.
I wonder if he like drank tea while he wrote it. I wonder if he had like music playing.
Right. So there's even like a famous story of Jared Leto when he was filming Suicide Squad.
Okay.
He sent like dead rats because he was the Joker and he
yes.
was sending it to his castmates.
Ew.
He was sending dead rats
That's
and
gross.
Like condoms and like all these random things to his castmates.
So this is like a normal
so
thing.
So this
that
is a normal thing that some people
do
that like that are into it.
And David Barry sending a nice letter is probably the most mild of the things that he could have done compared to other people.
I would say so. And I love hearing stories like this because I'm not an actor and I have no idea what it's like being an actor, how to get those and conjure those emotions up as you're, you know, as you're either preparing for a role or as you're performing in front of a camera. I can tell you, I wouldn't be able to do it. My question to you is, what did he write, do you think, while he's listening to his phonograph by candlelight, writing with a quill on the parchment that he made?
First off, I don't think it was a first draft that got sent out. I think he probably had four drafts sent out because I picture him writing it in pen or quill or something like that. Not pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Not on a laptop.
No.
This is a handwritten thing.
Handwritten.
Right?
Not on lined paper either. Mm-hmm. This is like legit like vellum.
Yeah. And like possibly a couple of beads of sweat dropped off.
Sure. Why not?
Maybe a tear.
Why not?
That's what I'm picturing.
Because he's into him. He's into Sam.
And like,
well, he's into Jamie, not Sam.
Yeah, but like, and he would not have sent one with like something scratched out or something accidentally misspelled or
oh,
something.
Oh no!
So
no.
He would have like crumpled that one up and then got another one and then added a little flourish to it and then be like, oh my god, that's so stupid, and crumpled it up and then did another one, had another glass of tea, possibly with some wine, got a little soppy, crumpled it up, did the fourth, but in that one.
So
tears.
Basically, you're saying he's like a 16-year-old girl writing a text message to a boy she likes.
Or how about Blake Larson writing me a courtship letter?
100%.
There you go.
100%.
16-year-old girl.
I.
Who run the world?
And another
girls.
Thing. That's true. Anytime in our house, the kids ask, you know, to do something, I always
no.
I gotta talk to the boss.
I'm just saying, you're more emotional than me.
Oh, of course I am. I'm Pisces. You're a Taurus. That's how it works. We all know that.
Okay.
What I want to know is, who else did he write to? That's the real question. I have a guess, but I would love to hear your guess
first. I can't say my guess.
Okay.
My guess is spoilerific.
Okay. My other guess, I have two guesses.
Okay.
The first guess, I'm just going to come out and say it, and I'll say we'll talk about it. Well, no, I'll say this. The first guess is Jamie's son.
William.
That's my first guess. Because I think he's going to be playing a role in this next season. My second guess, I'm just going to say it and then I'm going to drop the mic and we're going to talk about it after the next question. Okay. I think he wrote a letter to Bree.
So,
That's my next guess. That's all I'm going to say.
So then, you know, you think about the character. Interesting. You think about the character of Lord John Grey and the character, you know, the different traits that come to mind. And so this was the question that was asked. What are three main traits that he wanted to portray of Lord John Grey the most?
I don't know about three. I can just rattle some off the top of my head. I think his humanity is definitely his sense of humor and his compassion.
Okay.
Yeah, that's three. There we go.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Angela.
Oh, my God. Look at him being so efficient.
I know, right?
The bagpipe was back, because in that previous question, did you hear the bagpipe?
Yeah, I know.
It was like, I blew it, man.
Sorry, that's
how it
goes.
I went too fast, too fast.
So okay, so you know what I think it's time for? Well, yeah, it's absolutely the right time for this. Are you ready?
You bet.
It's Outlandish Theory time.
Bring it on.
Now I know you're going to have to stare at your computer screen while I say yes. All this. I did mention that I think he wrote a letter to Brianna, who would be Sophie Skelton. And I say that because, number one, we all know that Lord John Grey is going to be in the next season. And I do have an outlandish theory.
I don't know if everyone knows that, Blake, but you just let the cat out of the bag.
Well, I mean, it's public knowledge. That's not something that is spoilerific. That's public knowledge.
Fine. Sorry if that spoiled it for anybody.
My outlandish theory of the week is that Bree ends up in season four and not in Boston, but back in time in Scotland or in the Americas. And I say that because there's no way they're going to have Roger and Bree just chatting and walking around Boston looking at old letters. Boston cream pie. There's no way to have in that.
Well, her mom told her not to get fat, and she can't just eat Boston cream pies all day.
So.
Who
and
does that?
And I also think
don't
that Roger's
fat.
Going back too, by the way, because they both got the DNA. They both got the DNA to
just
go back.
Threw Claire into the bus.
Yes, you did. And you know, Lord John Grey is an important character, and how he gets back into the Fraser's life, I think I tried to think of the most soapy thing I could ever think of.
Bring it.
Which is, one, his wife finds out, Lord John Grey's wife finds out about his love of Jamie, and she kicks him out, and he doesn't know where to go, and he finds out that both Jamie and Claire and everybody are in the Americas, and he's going to take Jamie's son to him to fulfill that role because he can't do it anymore. Or perhaps maybe Lord John Grey's wife dies and he doesn't have a life anymore. Maybe he gives up his life as a British military officer and decides, I got nothing else to go. I got nowhere else to be. I want to be with Jamie, the person that I love, and be a part of that family of misfits that we talked about.
Ménage à trois.
So, hey, maybe he's hoping.
Voulez-vous coucher?
You never know. But I feel like that's what's going to happen.
What does that even mean, voulez-vous coucher?
I couldn't tell you. But in the meantime, as important of a role as William is going to play, in my opinion, and when Lord John Grey drops him off in the Americas, I do think that Bree is coming back. And I think that she is going to play a major role in not just Claire's life and Jamie's life, but I think Bree and Roger are going to be taking a much larger role within the story. And it's going to be almost like passing the torch. This is going to be the beginning of passing the torch off to the younger generation. And I think the key for Lord John Grey is Bree. Somehow, some way, these two are going to be connected. I don't know how yet. Maybe he needs Bree. I'm not sure yet. This isn't take development. But I think that's how he's going to end up being in season four. He's going to come back because his wife either dies or kicks him out, and he's going to have some kind of relation, important relationship with Bree. That's my guess. What do you think about that?
Interesting.
because I can't see any other way to get the guy back. It has to be soapy because it is what it is. And it has to get him back into the Americas. And the only way he's going to leave Jamaica or England is if he has nothing left. So either his wife kicks him out or the wife dies. That's the only thing. And it might be because of William. I mean, who knows? And I think that William's going to be playing a large role in season 4 as well.
So, can you listen to David Perry sing?
That was the surprise. Thank you very much. My love, are you ready to close this award-winning podcast, this Oscar-nominated podcast out?
Yes.
All right, let's get it done.
Your dream, I'll be your wish, I'll be your fantasy. I'll be your hope, I'll be your love, be everything that you need. I love you more with every breath, Julie Manly, D-P-Doo. I will be strong, I will be faithful, doesn't count on you be.
So yes, this is David Barry singing. And yes, he's actually at the event singing with one of his good friends, Matt Copley, who is a musician friend of David Barry's from Australia. And actually, David went to college with this guy as a music major and spent several years singing for an Australian band before he became a big-time actor.
Big time. So, on Outlander.
So I think that this is just a fun little adventure for David Barry and for us as podcast listeners to hear him sing. So if you could, please go to outlandercast.com and check out all of our great podcast episodes and articles there, including our event experience from Karen Rutledge that will be coming up there. And if you get a chance, please do go to iTunes and give us a review there. And, a five-star would be great. And perhaps maybe even a written review would be also advantageous.
You know, it's just a way to be nice. Guys, we're all in this together with Droughtlander. So make sure that
hold
you...
Hold on. Yeah. Go ahead.
So if you are listening to this podcast right now on a smartphone, if you could screenshot your phone and share it in your Instagram or Facebook story, it's just a really fun, hip way to let other people know about OutlanderCast's podcast. That's really where I'm going at. Right there.
We also want to thank all of our patrons who make all this possible, including Angela. She is one of them. And we want to be able to thank them and thank all the patrons who give to this podcast every single week and month and both in support and financially and monetarily. It helps us get the babysitters that we're actually using right now.
Huge shout out to Peg, Ann, Bobby, Liz, Meredith, Tina, Carolyn, Sharon, Tracy, Lisa, Sue, Keelan, Dana, Celine, Mary, Michelle, Jennifer, Heather, and Marilyn, and more.
So let's let David Barry close out the rest of this podcast. What do you think, my darling?
I think that's a brilliant idea.
All right, let's do it.
I'll be your wish, I'll be your fantasy. I'll be your hope, I'll be your love, be everything that you need. I love you more with every breath, truly, madly, deeply do. Oh, oh. And I want to stand with you on a mountain.
I want to bathe with you in the sea. I want to lay like this forever
until the sky falls down on me. And I want to stand with you on the mountain. And I want to
I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And thank you so much for listening to Outlander Cast.